The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Guys, we try to keep track of most of the stuff on Game of Thrones for you, but if you're getting confused about who's related to who or where is this place in relation to that place, highly recommend you check out that iBooks has an exclusive version of George R.R. Martin's original Game of Thrones books called the Enhanced Editions to help you keep track of the storylines and characters in really fun interactive ways. There's maps, there's family trees. These books are available only on iBooks, so go to apple.co/Game of Thrones and check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they will be available, hopefully, where you live.
After a one-year break, EW's Game of Thrones weekly podcast is back in action for Season 7, which we're kicking off with this special preview edition that's going to get into a bunch of different pre-season Game of Thrones topics. We're going to talk about the trailers. We're going to talk about our visit to the throne set. We're going to talk about the prequels that HBO is working on. We got some final season news, and we're going to hit basically as much as we can over the next hour. I'm James Hibbard, EW editor-at-large. I go to the throne set each year and have written about, 1,000 or so stories about the show. And joining me, as always, is EW senior writer and a huge fan of all things Song of Ice and Fire, Darren Franich. Darren, how ready are you for this new season?
I'm very ready, like a lot of people. I feel like it's been such a long time, longer break than usual between seasons. I'm especially excited about digging in this episode because you have been doing all kinds of great stuff from the land of Westeros, reporting regularly on all the doings there. But, you know, just with this new season, man, I'm just like, I feel like the excitement that we went so in-depth on at the end of last season, this feeling of just like the deck being clear, these characters who've always been so important coming back to the fore, and some other characters who we loved, you know, dying in a burning hellfire inferno. I'm coming in now and I'm just like, God, like, there have been some seasons that have, you know, taken a while to get going, and like, you know, some of the best seasons have been that kind of slow burn, and I just feel like there's not going to be that this year. It just feels like we're coming in so kinetically off of that finale last year, and I'm very excited.
Yeah, the pace is definitely faster this year, and we're definitely going to talk about that. And you touch on something that I should probably tell our listeners, for those who didn't listen to the previous season of podcast we did. Yeah, basically, I go to the set, and so I basically know what's going to happen, but I can't talk about any spoilers, whereas Darren avoids all spoilers, and so he's free to theorize without inside knowledge. So we work together and we do a podcast together, but I don't share Thronesian secrets with him. And we also got ourselves a sponsor. Apple iBooks is going to be sponsoring our first few episodes, which we're really excited about. They have these enhanced editions of George R.R. Martin's novels on iBooks. And, you know, it's great to get a sponsor, and but it's even better to get a sponsor, you know, that has a product that's really on brand for what we're talking about and is also really exciting too. We've had a chance to play around with these enhanced editions of Martin's books.
James, I want to start your great cover story on the new season of Game of Thrones. Kind of began with an incredible and tantalizing bit of scene setting. You were there in the frozen north during the filming of a scene that is quite momentous. You know some of the characters who were there, and you have heartlessly refused to tell me. But talk a little bit about what it was like being on set this year. I mean, you know, you've been our man in Westeros for such a long time. What's the mood like? You know, where were you? What were you seeing? What can you tell us about, you know, what it's like while they're filming this sort of penultimate season of the show?
In general, you know, they only have like a couple of reporters in the set a year, and your goal when you're there is to not stand out. You know, you want, you know, when I'm on there, I like dress like a crew member. I try to keep out of everybody's way. You know, you try not to, when people are shooting, you try to avoid their eye line, so you're not like catching their eye and distracting them. You know, there's all these little things that you try and do to get what you need while also, you know, not making other people's jobs harder.
You're like the spider of the Game of Thrones set. You're like everywhere and yet nowhere, and you know everything, but you will reveal nothing. It's funny, you know, hearing you talk about these different characters coming together. I assume you're talking about Davos Seaworth and the great Illyrio Mopatis. But I what's it like talking to some of these actors this year? I mean, it seems as if on one hand you have actors who've been on the show for so long, and on the other hand, you know, some of them have been in different continents, practically, you know, both fictionally and in some cases quite literally. What's it been like for them, sort of either reconnecting with these people or just sort of playing some of the movements that are coming up this season?
Yeah, they're all very excited because these are castmates that they see at premieres and they see at Comic-Con, and you know, they'll see at different Game of Thrones events, but they've never had a chance to work with them before. And so they're all very excited to play off new people that they know and are perhaps friends with, but they haven't had an opportunity to work with. And in some cases, it inspired some nervousness among a couple of cast members. They're like, you know, it's weird to do what I do in front of a person that, you know, I know as a friend, but I've never worked with before. So it was interesting to see the different range of reactions that people had.
Mm-hmm. Talk about just like favorite moments from your set visit. And maybe we should clarify, like, you know, if you can tell us, like, you know, where exactly were you? What sets were you seeing? What kind of moments were you kind of witnessing when you were there?
I think some of the most interesting sets I can talk about is one I was on The Silence, which is Euron Greyjoy's ship, and that was pretty cool because, you know, I mean, it was sort of this like this epic you know, ship set where they have some considerable action scenes this season. And you know, as a Greyjoy fan, I think you're going to be really into Euron this year, especially compared to last year. They're doing some things to his character that are a little different this time that I think people are really going to be into. And notice you haven't seen anything from him yet. You haven't seen any photos, you haven't seen any video of that character yet. I think he's going to be one that's going to take people by surprise. You know, they're kind of leveling up his character because he plays a major role this season, and especially with Ramsay Bolton now gone, he's sort of the new human big bad. Mm-hmm. In the season. Another cool set was this frozen lake that they created, and it's amazing to see, you know, when these professional set designers tackle a quarry and they make it into this. You know, Arctic wasteland that you feel careful about walking on because it looks so much like ice that you feel like you're going to slip, even though it's totally not, you know? So yeah, the attention to detail that they do is always pretty impressive. And I got to see Kit Harington in some wintry action, getting paper snow blown in his face by like five massive fans, and to the point where, you know, he was having to cough and, you know, make jokes about getting white lung from all the paper snow he was inhaling.
My like personal dream for the end of the show, like, I don't think this is going to happen because I truly kind of think that like most of the main characters are going to die, but my dream is for Jon Snow to wind up sort of like an end of the Shawshank Redemption moment where he's just like on a beautiful sunny beach somewhere, because poor Kit Harington, like, there's people on the show who've been hanging out in like Spain and like all these like nice temperate places, and all he does all day is it's either real snow or it's paper snow. That seems to be like the two settings that he is sort of constantly being assaulted with.
Yeah, and that actor, you know, he's really had the most punishing you know, journey on that show in terms of what he's had to do physically. I mean, he's always in the cold, he's always in the rain. A lot of times he's filming in the rain and you don't even know it because rain doesn't show up on film unless they fake it and make it show up in terms of the size of the drops that they're using. For the most part, if they're shooting in the rain, you don't even see it. So he's like cold and muddy and wet and rainy and swinging around swords, you know, in the most harshest of conditions season after season, and he doesn't complain. He just he kind of gets into it. You know, he really loves that character and really loves the physical challenge of it.
Yeah, it's really been a decade of like climbing through corpses for Kit Harington, so I'm like really excited to see what he has coming up.
Climbing through corpses, the Kit Harington story.
I would read that whole memoir. I would read the two volume memoir. James, you were kind of mentioning some of the stuff that we had seen in the trailers and the things we had not seen. When the first trailer hit, we were kind of going back and forth about it. I had a lot of theories about it. You said they were all wrong. But some of the stuff that I think people have been the most excited about are the size of dragons this year. And of course, you know, you had that like great photo that ran in EW. What's the line that they've been throwing around? They're the size of like 747s this year.
Yeah. I, you know, that photo, man, I had been begging HBO for a new dragon photo for a cover story, and the showrunners approved one at the last minute, and I opened that email and I literally gasped when I saw that. It looked like some epic fantasy painting. I was so excited that I didn't even say anything to HBO because until after we put it online, because I honestly thought that they made a mistake. You know, because normally they play their cards so close to their vest when it comes to action, scene, assets. I thought maybe they sent that one by accident and I didn't want to draw their attention to how cool it was and risk them changing their mind. That image of Danny on top Drogon on some battlefield with all these flames, it looked like some medieval painting. And you know what we really haven't quite seen is their firepower, and that's something that they're excited to show, because you know we've seen them flying around and we've seen a little bit of fire action in the trailers, but what they can do to a group of soldiers now is pretty devastating.
Yeah, I would think it's interesting because, you know, and this is very true of the books as well, there's this interesting aspect to the story where it's kind of like you begin in the most realistic version of a fantasy story. And even, you know, throughout the first season and, you know, throughout the first book, there's this idea that, oh, like, magic's kind of gone from this world, dragons are all gone now. And I love this sort of, like, gradual arc of getting to this place where, you know, you were kind of mentioning, like, the cover of a fantasy novel. Like, it feels like, you know, in a really great and wonderful sort of build-up, we're now fully in the, like, you know, Shannara, like, Dragonlance period of just these incredible creatures. And, I mean, to me, what's so cool to see throughout the trailer is that, like, the scope of the show has really expanded as well. I mean, like, you know, I count, like, three or four big battle-looking moments in the trailer that they're sort of teasing, which to me just kind of speaks to how the show itself has kind of really evolved and gotten more ambitious in its staging. Is that kind of something that, I mean, it feels as if with this season, as much as it is a shorter episode run, it's definitely like maybe allowed to do a lot more elaborate stuff that they weren't always able to do in earlier seasons.
Yeah, and just to circle back on your point, in terms of what we have seen, if you look at the photos online especially, they all tend to be from like the same scene with each character, and the trailer kind of follows suit. You're seeing about one or two scenes of each character. And what I'm driving at there is that as much as you've seen, you haven't seen a lot. There is so much more in the season than what's being shown at this point. So with some of these characters, you'll realize when you start to watch the season, oh, everything I've seen so far is from like their very first scene, and everything after that is something totally different, which is exciting. But yeah, you know, to your point, the pacing this season is faster, and it's interesting because the showrunners originally thought this penultimate season would be a ramp up. It would be like, oh, we're going to have lots of conversations and characters meeting, and it's going to set the stage for a really epic final action-filled season. And then when they went to write it, they realized, wait, if this person meets this person, then this happens, then this happens. And they realized, start to put these characters together, they all want to kill each other. There's going to be some major action scenes, whether we want to or not. So it ended up being a much more action-driven season than they originally planned. And as such, all the actors were saying that they couldn't believe when they were reading the scripts. It's like, wow, this is happening this fast. This is happening this fast. I mean, they're really ramping up the speed in which things take place.
Which again, and to me, I mean, like, I think back to like the season two premiere, which was largely about like, people are kind of like gradually moving places. There's something kind of weird happening up in the sky. We're just sort of like resetting where they're all at and pushing them in some direction. And it feels like this season starting off at a very different place. Just pick out like some other great moments from the trailer. You mentioned A lot of great stuff with the Greyjoys. Cool stuff out in the water. I think the moment that I kind of, you know, have gone back to the most, just as far as being like, whoa, unexpected from that first trailer was, you know, the bringing together of the Greyjoys and the Martells with the sequence of seeing Yara and Ilaria seemingly making out, which to me seems to imply some much more interesting stuff happening between those two families. I like this idea of just throughout what seems to be happening now is like as much as we're focusing on the Starks and on the Lannisters, or certainly like shifting focus back to these characters who've defined the show. I like the idea of like these kind of remnants of these other families are now beginning to interact in some ways. Now that I've mentioned the Greyjoys once, I can move on to the fact that I really liked how the trailer started and put so much sort of time and narrative weight on Sansa. It's funny, I was fortunate enough to speak to Issa Rae, who's the creator and writer and star of the show that's going to be on the same night as Game of Thrones this season, Insecure. And she kind of mentioned that, like, you know, watching Game of Thrones, Sansa used to be a character where you were just like, oh, come on, like, what is, like, wrong with you? And now just gradually over the last couple of seasons, she describes Sansa as a bad bitch, which is, like, very true. And I just think that, like, it's so cool to see how that character, who I feel like once was sort of this, if not totally despised, certainly loathed figure in the sort of firmament of Game of Thrones, I just feel like there's an incredible amount of tension and thrills and certainly excitement around her going into this season. So I was super stoked to kind of, like, you know, see her get such prominent placement in the trailer.
Yeah, this season for Sansa is interesting because this is the first time where she's actually had power. You know, she had some power last season, but she was also in the middle of planning this incredible epic battle and scrambling. Now she's in Winterfell. She has some control over how things are going. And the question is now that she has some power, what's she going to do with it? Because as we've seen over and over again in Game of Thrones, getting power is hard, but keeping it and figuring out what to do with it is much harder. And, you know, on one hand, she's got Jon Snow in one ear, in the other ear, she has Littlefinger of all people. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how she plots her course through the challenges to come.
Yeah, I feel like there's that great line about, I think this is from Robert Caro, who writes all the Lyndon Johnson biographies, that, like, power doesn't necessarily corrupt, but it does reveal. Like, you know, when you have power, it sort of reveals the most id, superego, deepest corners of your subconsciousness, because, you know, you're now allowed to kind of show that off. And to think of, like, what that means for Sansa, after all she's been through, super stoked about that. Also, just want to quickly call out, again, this was the moment that I saw kind of broken out most after that first trailer, the grayscale hand kind of appearing through what looks to be a prison cell. I realized, I guess I do kind of like Ser Jorah Mormont. Like, there's definitely been times where I've been like, ah, Jorah, like, you're just such a, like, doof in some ways. But I was kind of like, oh, man, like, you know, the prospect of seeing him again, seeing how he may have sort of, like, corroded just from the grayscale, really kind of interested in that. I love that we're at this point where the show can have 20 characters who I care about and then suddenly just sort of pull out of its sort of, like, you know, bench someone who you haven't seen in a while. So I'm excited to see what happens with him. I'm not particularly hopeful that he makes it out alive from this season, frankly.
This season definitely focuses on, you know, in terms of his character, on him wrestling with that disease and of grayscale and whether he overcomes it. Yeah, I used to dub him Sir Friendzone in the recaps. Poor Sir Jorah. He said such a rough road.
He has. James, you were sort of talking a little bit about the pacing of this season. Can you just, like, talk in general about, like, some of the things we've learned about how this season is going to flow? I mean, like, we have 7 episodes, which I feel like people might initially think, like, oh no, that means we're getting less stuff than usual. But I feel like one element of your reporting has been focused on this idea of, like, that's really not the case. Like, you know, whatever the timing might be, the actual kind of, you know, cumulative effect is going to be not, certainly by no means less than, I guess.
Yeah. It's the cumulative effect is that even though you're getting less time, it's more in just about every other way you can think of. I mean, because they spent just as much time and even more money to make this season as they did last season when they did 10 episodes, so, because they're ratcheting up their ambition, and which they've done every season. And so, you know, the production values and kind of what you're getting is more lavish on average than before. And because there are fewer characters than ever before, pure main characters than ever before, because they keep killing them off, and and because you have characters meeting, you know, the main cast members were all saying, "Wow, I didn't expect this, but I am working more than I ever have before." Because instead of having to split each episode between like eight different storylines and eight different locations, when you have fewer characters and you have some of them together, you're able to, you know, give your main characters more screen time. And the third aspect is, you know, the running time itself. It's definitely less, but, you know, we also have a couple supersized episodes this season. There are two over 60 minutes, one of which is a little over 80 minutes long. That's the finale. So that's basically a movie.
Whoa!
Yeah, so, you know, we're getting less in one metric, but, you know, from the perspective of the producers, you know, they're giving you as much as they ever have, if not more in some respects.
Yeah, and, you know, you sort of mentioned this. This, I think, is the thing that I'm most excited about, just as far as, like, seeing some of these performers. This idea that, like, I mean, I don't know when Critical Mass was. Maybe it was actually much earlier in the show, but there was a point where it felt like, okay, here are the centric characters. They each have their kind of supporting cast around them. We're kind of very quickly flipping between them, almost like, you know, a movie like Traffic or Love Actually, just sort of like constantly kind of getting these short check-ins. It almost feels to me actually like earlier seasons were this kind of cut-up of each person having their own superhero movie, and now it's like, okay, now we're in like Avengers territory. Like, now they're able to kind of come together more, and also to your point, now we're just seeing more of them, which, you know, interesting. I mean, certainly a lot of sad losses last season, from, you know, Marjorie to you know, someone like the High Sparrow, who was relatively more of a recent introduction. But interesting that now it is sort of like, okay, like, there's no more kids to focus on because most of them are dead. Like, you know, some of the enemies are dead. We can kind of focus in on these characters, which I have to imagine for the performers, that's got to be so interesting this deep into a show. I feel like usually the longer shows are on, the more it's kind of like, hi, now I'm the lead actor who's now the producer and I want to work 2 days a week. Like, you know, David Caruso and like later CSI Miami, like seasons. This seems like it's the polar opposite in some ways, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, you're asking about the set visit. One feeling I had while watching it was some of these scenes get shot is, you know, and it's not an original thought to want more Game of Thrones, but I don't think I ever wanted more Game of Thrones than when watching some of these scenes. And at one point I asked the producers, I'm like, man, you know, seeing these two or whatever together, doesn't it make you want to do more of this? Because now that they're you know, these certain characters are together, it's like, wow, it's in some ways it's like a whole new show, and there's so much you could do with these characters together that it almost feels a little frustrating, because you're just like, oh, we're getting so little, you know, time-wise, of these new combinations that we've been denied for so long, you know. And, you know, their point is that, you know, they have a story to tell. You know, they have a certain narrative that's been locked from the beginning, and they want to be. And I think one of their biggest fears has always been, you know, wearing out their welcome. They really want to end on a high note. You know, they don't want to drop the ball, and they, you know, much rather have people being upset that there isn't more than feeling even slightly like this is too much.
And I mean, listen, we all know we'd love to see young Griff and Lady Stoneheart hang out together for many seasons yet to come, but sometimes it only makes sense doing it, you know, just once this season. You know, iconic characters like that, you don't want them to wear out their welcome. Nobody is ever going to know who young Griff is. That's probably okay. I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I'll save that.
You just love throwing in your obscure George George R. R. Martin characters to just throw them in the podcast for all the people who don't read the books.
Sometime soon, book six is going to come out. This is something that, you know, plays out less with regards to watching the show now, because of course this season fully into this realm of where showrunners are really kind of like charting their own course, or certainly like, you know, are able to kind of chart their own course far beyond what the books have gotten to. But that's one thing that just as a fan of this whole thing, I'm excited about.
You're listening to Game of Thrones Weekly.
Game of Thrones Weekly.
You guys know I love Game of Thrones, and I love A Song of Ice and Fire, the book series that George R. R. Martin wrote that inspired Game of Thrones. When I used to read the physical editions of the books, my one frustration with them was that every couple pages I would flip to the front to look at the map and reorient myself to where I was on Westeros or Essos, or I'd flip to the back of the book and kind of reorient myself like, okay, how does Kevin Lannister relate to this other Lannister? What are the family trees like? Who are the bannermen for who? Guess what? iBooks has solved that problem. They have an exclusive version of George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones called the Enhanced Editions, and they are enhanced. If someone appears or reappears for the first time in a long time, you can click on their name, see who they're related to, see what they've been up to. It's super key for the later books when people just reappear after 3,000 pages of not being in the saga, and you're like, what were they doing last time? Now you know. There's interactive maps, there's house histories. Just a great way to dive deep into the world of George R. R. Martin, and the author himself worked on these enhanced editions. These books are available exclusively on iBooks, so go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live. Again, these are George R. R. Martin approved, and it's a great way to dive into the world of Game of Thrones, whether you're reading the books for the first time or re-experiencing the majestic wonder that he created all over again.
Speaking of obscure characters, we should talk about the prequels, too.
Yeah, so what? They're doing, like, 20 prequels? What, like, where did this come from? What, like...
You know, it's amazing. I first heard that they were doing three, that they're going to be developing three a bunch of months ago. It took a while to get it confirmed, and then it was four, and now it's, like, five. You know, so there's... I have never seen anything like this covering television. But at the same time, it makes perfect sense, because if you want a new series to follow up Game of Thrones, and by the way, HBO has never done a prequel series or a sequel series or a spinoff series. They've done movies after a show has ended, but they've never continued a show in any way. So to do five, you know, makes sense, because it's such lightning in a bottle to get one of these working correctly, that they recognize that their best odds of getting one to work is to develop as many as they can and just pick whichever one feels right.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting, too, because, of course, you know, there was the initial report about all this. A lot of people, myself included, were kind of like, oh, this is, like, a great moment for the Brienne of Tarth kind of sequel spinoff. You know, I was already kind of picturing how, like, a character like that, someone who may not necessarily need to have a kind of grand finale on this show, could then kind of, like, you know, kind of, we could follow her or somebody else off on their own journey. There was a very rapid response from George R. R. Martin himself, saying there will be no sequel series, or at least that's not anything that they're currently developing, which I found kind of interesting. He also, I think, specifically said not going to be about Duncan Egg, the kind of two characters that he's written about extensively in short story form. He did kind of leave the possibilities open for a lot of the stuff he's done with the Targaryen family that's set, like, you know, I want to say it's about like a century or so pre-Game of Thrones, which if anybody like hasn't read Princess and the Queen and wants just sort of a nice little, like, you know, pre-season aperitif, would definitely recommend that. That's a lot of fun. I mean, to me, it's interesting just kind of because I'm sure a lot of us are so emotional kind of going into these last couple of seasons. It is interesting now to kind of have, similar in a way to when with Breaking Bad, you knew there would be more after somehow. There is this sense of, okay, right, like, we're not sure what this is going to be. We still know this is going to be like a grand finale for this, but interesting to think that there might be more kind of set in this world. I mean, how do you kind of feel, James, like, as we go into these last couple of seasons, the knowledge that there is maybe going to be more Thrones, like, I don't know, how should we, like, should that be, like, on our minds? Like, you know, it seems very clear to me that this show is a separate thing, right? Like, this is not, it's not like we're going to be getting, like, Saul says goodbye and then, you know, runs off to his, you know, new adventures or anything like that.
Yeah, basically, from what I gather, we shouldn't expect one of these shows anytime soon. Game of Thrones will finish before any prequel series comes on the air. You know, another thing, you know, you mentioned, you know, doing something about the Targaryens from back in the day. That actually was one of the rumors that I originally heard when I first heard they were doing three prequels, that was one of them, but I never got that confirmed in any way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing that George R. Martin has shot down is the idea of it being about Robert's Rebellion, which I know some viewers were wanting. To me, I completely agree with George R. R. Martin on this one, because for the reasons he listed, and that is, you already know that story.
Yeah.
And by the time the show is over, you're going to know even more about that story. So, you know, it really runs into the Star Wars prequels situation, where you already know what happens with the major players involved, so it kind of drains it of any suspense.
Yeah.
So I think the further you go back, the better.
Yeah. So I couldn't agree more. I mean, to me, like, what's cool about thinking about focusing on the Targaryens is it's not necessarily further back in terms of setting. You know, I mean, like, you know, it is a different enough, like, arena of time that you aren't going to, like, meet anybody necessarily unless someone goes and visits the Three-Eyed Raven or something. But I'd be even kind of more intrigued. I mean, I guess to me it all kind of comes down to how different do they want this show to feel, and, you know, is it also a big sprawling ensemble? Is it something, like, kind of different, more along the lines of what Duncan Egg is? I'd almost kind of like to see just go, like, way, way back and do something in the sort of, you know, arrival of the First Men and the Andals and the Rhoynar and all those other, like, various peoples of the ancient world who I totally forget about. Like, something that's maybe a little more in keeping with, like, you know, that kind of pulp fantasy Robert E. Howard type of thing, where, you know, you're kind of seeing the birth of Westeros, but it's like the birth. Like, yeah, to your point about the Star Wars prequels, it's not like, finally, we see how the Old Republic fell. It's like, what was there before the Old Republic, so to speak? And, you know, how do these sort of, like, figures, these families who we kind of all know and love now, what does their kind of origin story look like? It would sort of be like the birth of Westeros civilization, the same way that Deadwood was the birth of, like, American frontier civilization. So that's what I kind of see in my head. Like, you know, you almost kind of want it to be like the arrival of that first guy on the ship who came from, was it Valeria? I'm gonna have to turn in my nerd card here, but, like, you kind of want it to be like, okay, like, we're arriving in Westeros. There are these kind of magic creatures. I'd be kind of a little intrigued by that. My sense is they'd go a little closer to the Game of Thrones universe that we know and love, which is also totally cool. James, we've been sort of talking about what's to come after the final season, but let's talk a bit about the fact that we're going into the second to last season, 7 episodes of that. What do we know, if anything, about that last season of Game of Thrones? I mean, like, you know, as we're sort of going through this march of 7 episodes, where's that march going to ultimately take us to?
Yeah, we definitely know that it is indeed going to be 6 episodes, which HBO wanted more, and the showrunners were very firm about it being 6. I'm sure at least one or two will be supersized, just like this season. That's an assumption, but it just seems like a one that's probably right. We know the showrunners are currently writing those scripts as we speak. And we also know something that's really interesting. They told us that they're going to be spending a year and a half from the time we conducted, you know, this interview just last month in May, on the final season. So even though it's only 6 episodes, they're going to be spending longer than usual to make them, which follows everything that they're doing this season. It's like they're trying to make each season better and more epic than the one before it. And, you know, a lot of people looked at those shorter seasons and thought they were somehow getting less, but I think they were looking at it as, you know, how can we make it so that we can pull off the cinematic, you know, big budget movie style action scenes that we need to do, And by doing fewer episodes, but having the same budget for the season, they're able to do that. So it sounds like they're really going to be focused, you know, on this final season. And because of that, it might not air until 2019.
Come on, 2019. I'm so intrigued by that. James, I want to hit you with some predictions for this season. I want to give you a lot of what's going to happen. You're going to tantalize me throughout this season of our podcast with some of the things that you know about. My big prediction is, you know, we had that great cover with all the remaining Stark children hanging out together. Mm. What a fun time seeing all those actors together. You know, who knows when we'll get them all together in the show, if ever, but they sure looked happy. You know, surely the Stark family can't suffer any more tragedy. My hot theory for the season is we're losing two Starks, counting the Snow. I think it's going to be... We're going to, as much as I love Sansa, I think this season for her is going to be like a big showcase season. It's going to end with like a tragic death. I'll feel sad about that. I don't want it to happen. I think it is going to happen. From there, the question is like, all right, like, who else can we lose? Jon Snow can't die. He's already died. His tragedy is going to be that he's left just all alone wandering the earth like Kane in Kung Fu. Arya? I can't believe it. I feel like so much of the last few years of the show has been setting her up on... We've kind of talked about this. Her, like, Batman Begins origin story is, like, now complete. I feel like, you know, there's so much left to be done with her. Unfortunately, that leaves Bran. You know, he's the kind of guy where we can lose him and he'll kind of live on in the trees, in the spiritual tree force. So I think... We're losing Bran and Sansa this year. I hope not, because I like both of them a lot. But I have a sense that, like, nothing good... Like, whenever something good happens for the Starks, like, for them it's always one good thing and two bad things. So, and I feel like too many good things happened for them last year.
And the two bad things will be Sansa and Bran kicking.
Yes, yes. That's what I'm thinking.
You mentioned Bran. Last season, you know, the show raised eyebrows among a lot of fans by opening up the time travel Pandora's box. And one thing that the writers wrestled with a little bit this season, going into this season, is what do you do with Bran if he knows everything? You know, if he's able to know all this and access all these different times and maybe even impact time, you know, how do you add that into a story without that taking over the story? On the set, they dubbed him Dr. Bran Hatton, the producers did. And one thing the producers pointed out, and this isn't a spoiler, is if you go back and watch last season, what's important is that Bran asked the Three-Eyed Raven, you know, am I ready? And the Three-Eyed Raven said, no, you're not ready, but they're out of time. And they kind of had to do this like mega download into Bran's brain. And so I think one thing you should look for potentially this season is that while Bran has all this knowledge, he can't necessarily access it in the way that would be most convenient for him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's definitely... got been kind of messed up by this experience last season. So I think that's a cool way that they've come up with to handle that without it being this thing that becomes overwhelming and that it's all magic and he can totally know everything.
Right. Yeah. Like what you don't want to have happen is like, weirdly, you kind of don't want him to become like Dr. Manhattan, the character from Watchmen, where he like does know everything, but he's just like, I'm not going to tell you about that now. Like that is the most annoying thing as a viewer when you're like, you know, you'll find out soon. Like, Bran, come on. Just fill us in already. Who were the first men? Other big theory. We've talked a lot, and you know, maybe my even structure for this is inaccurate, and I'm ready and willing to be surprised. I'm always intrigued to kind of know, you know, whether it's George R. R. Martin and his conception or the showrunners in their conception. Like, what is the final boss of Game of Thrones? And, you know, what is the lead up to that final boss? And to me, like, you know, right now, the most compelling, and when I say final boss, I mean, like, there are so many things that are just, like, cycling through the air right now as far as conflicts, as far as, like, nemesis figures for our characters, the fact that many of our beloved characters are nemeses for other people, you know, where are we kind of building towards? And one compelling theory is, you know, everything to do with the politics and humans and the literal Game of Thrones is all just kind of prologue to the White Walkers. That, you know, we're kind of, you know, we're going to see the finale of that question of who sits on the Iron Throne, and then that person or people's first duty is going to be like defeating the White Walkers. The counter theory is like, you know, is it the other way around? Is it that like the White Walkers are this thing that must be defeated, but afterwards there will still be this sort of a real human problem still to be dealt with? You know, with that, I always think about how George R. R. Martin, one of his kind of great lines, he's, among other things, he's great to kind of listen to as an analyzer of J.R.R. Tolkien and of Lord of the Rings. He always talked about this idea of, like, you know, after the Battle of Pelennor Field in Return of the King, what happened to all those orcs? Like, where do they go? What's the sort of... And I find that, like, I'm intrigued to see that, like, the show, as much as there is, I know, going to be this great showdown with the Night King and everything, I have to imagine there'll be more to it after that. This is all to say, like, you know, I'm not sure who this season's level boss is. I find it hard to believe that, you know, we'd see the end of the Night King, and for that matter, I find it hard to believe that we'd see the end of Cersei, who feels like she's the main nemesis figure for people like Dany and Jon right now. This leads me to assume that, like, I guess you were kind of mentioning earlier this idea that Euron is kind of the new big bad of this season, which would make the obvious thing to say, like, okay, this season, it's kind of like, you know, Kill Bill Volume 1 was all about getting rid of Oren Ishii. This season is sort of, okay, like, let's, like, swab the deck, take out this guy, then we'll focus in. That being said, as I'm saying this season's all about getting Euron, I have to imagine that the showrunners have a much more interesting and compelling notion of all this. Like, you know, again, this isn't literally, like, the second-to-last level of a video game, so I'm intrigued to see how those kind of different poles kind of play out. You know, like, is there a Ramsay of this season, or is it a little bit more kind of a complicated three-ring circus?
My instinct on this, and I really don't know, is that the final conflict will definitely be a human drama one. I think the showrunners have always been focused on the human drama of the story, and regardless of how George R. R. Martin plans to end his books, that the final conflict in the show will be a human one, not a supernatural one. And I don't think it's going to be something where it's a hero versus a villain. I think it's going to be two characters or more that you love, mm-hmm. and that one of them's going
to
die.
On that note, my last prediction for this season, sure to be wrong, I'm thinking Dany and John, think they're going to meet episode 4, maybe episode 5. My reasoning for this is, you know, we've got some teases in the trailer about John talking to someone about what their families used to do. Not sure if that's Dany. We know Dany's hanging out, like, much closer to John than she used to, and she now has a vehicle that happens to be her dragon child that she can perhaps cover large distances with. Like, I like how for so much of the run of this story, the frustration is always like, well, it'd be great if these two characters could get together, but they're like 10 weeks apart by, like, ship, or they're like, you know, 15 weeks apart by travel. And it's like, now we're at that point in Final Fantasy VII where you have the airship and you're like, all right, like, we can go anywhere that we want to if we're Dany. So I think that meeting happens. Just, you know, you were saying things are happening earlier than we expect. The natural assumption, I think, would be that those two defining characters, like, that would kind of be like the end of season meetup. You know, like, you know, that would be, we've talked about this before, but, like, you know, that's like the next, like, De Niro and Pacino in Heat kind of getting together moment. So I think it'll happen earlier than we expect. What did I say? Episode 5? I'm going to say episode 4. That's when I think it's happening. Episode 4 is the big Dany John meetup. I can already see you laughing. I can already see you. You're already looking at me like, Franich, how have you gotten it so wrong yet again?
I do think the idea of, like, Dany hanging out in Winterfell, like, doing shots with the Starks, you know, would be I could watch a whole episode of just that.
If Game of Thrones ever needed to do a bottle episode, which if any show doesn't, it's Game of Thrones, that would be the one that I would select for sure. Well, cool, James. Any other thoughts as we go into season 7 of Game of Thrones? You know, as we kind of like wrap up, we're going into it. So much excitement. Like, it's been the longest wait ever so far. Probably going to be much longer before next season. You know, what do you kind of think that, like, fans can just sort of be thinking about as we kind of go into this final season?
You know, I think people's expectations for the show keep going up. And I think one smart thing that the showrunners have realized is that would happen. And so they've adjusted accordingly. The last two episodes of season six, directed by Miguel Sapochnik, were incredible. I mean, they're two of the most incredible episodes of television ever made. And they were, you know, received all sorts of acclaim and Emmy awards. And those episodes, I think, loom large in their mind in terms of, well, great, now we have to beat that somehow, you know, every episode. And I don't think that's possible at all. But I think everyone's going to be struck by just how big it is, how fast moving it is. It's almost like they have, you know, teleportation at this point in terms of getting from one spot to the to another in Westeros. And some of the meetings that happen. One of the producers had a great quote talking about how, you know, as much fun as it is to see like a battle scene with horses clashing into each other, seeing some of these characters clash into each other is going to be some really exciting stuff. I mean, these have been scenes that they've been wanting to write since season one and thinking about how they would write them since season one. So I think we're going to see both on the action side and the human drama side some really exciting things. And we're going to be here, you know, each week releasing new episodes to break it down and talk about it and talk about things from behind the scenes, elements that that were from the set, analyzing, debating each episode in terms of the twists and turns that happen. We're going to have some giveaways again from the HBO store.
Do you have anything you want to share with us? Something you're excited about? Something that jumped out at you from the trailer? Something that you're hoping may come in from the books? Or something that you're just, you know, two people who you want to see finally get together on this show? You can always let us know. He's at James Hibbard on Twitter. I'm at Darren Franich. If you have like a much longer thought, you can email us at gotpodcast@ew.com. That's gotpodcast@ew.com. We'll be here every Monday during the Thrones season, talking about Thrones, going in depth, talking Greyjoys, Martells, Tyrells, Lannisters, Targaryens. Who'd I forget? Anyone? Nobody?
Starks.
Starks.
Hello. Only the biggest one, Darren.
Who else is there? Are there any Starks left on the show? We're excited about chatting with you all this season, everybody. Thanks for listening. You guys know we love keeping track of Game of Thrones for you, but if you want to dive in and experience the full panoramic scope of the world that George R.R. Martin created, go to iBooks. They have an exclusive version of George R.R. Martin's original Game of Thrones books called the Enhanced Editions. Every chapter starts with an interactive map so you know exactly where you are, any name you can click on and find out who this person is and how they're related to everyone else in the family tree who you've met over the course of the last 2,000 or 3,000 pages. These books are available exclusively on iBooks, so go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live. It's such a great way to just get all the information you need, all the different families, all the different bannermen, all the different locations in a fun, interactive method. So go to apple.co/Game of Thrones and check them out. It's a great way to experience Game of Thrones.